Digital Salon Season 3.
It makes me feel like I'm going back in time almost. Like, it makes me feel like I'm part of the land again.
Huitlacoche is a ancestral food of Mesoamerica.
Para mí el huitlacoche es una comida ancestral.
An ancestral food that we have not woken up to.
It's a fungus that grows with corn and historically has grown with corn for all of corn's existence.
Huitlacoche for me, I really never tasted it, so I don't really know how it is.
Es algo muy, muy sagrado. E incluso su sabor es como que te transporta a esos tiempos.
If anybody knows about anything about corn, how important corn has been to indigenous people on this continent, you know, we hold it sacred, and it's one of our original foods también. And so for this mushroom to be growing on corn, for our community, the POC Funtech community, and those who know this bean, is very special to us and important. And like, we refer to it as a being, as an ancestor, as a relative, and so this is our elder here visiting us today. I want to introduce you all to Huitlacoche, or Huitlacoche. And in the Nahuatl language,
in preparation for a cooking demonstration in San Diego, we headed to Tijuana to pick up fresh huitlacoche from a mercado.
I have never seen huitlacoche in the markets or anywhere in my neighborhood.
Around the same time, like my early 20s, after having them in Mexico City, then I learned of a spot in Pomona. There's this restaurant called Sabor Mexicano, and it's Oaxaqueño / DF style food. And so they have DF style quesadillas with huitlacoche and flor de calabaza. That's the only place I've seen them.
I haven't seen huitlacoche in any grocery store, but recently my friend and I actually went to downtown LA specifically to find it because there are food carts in downtown LA that sell huitlacoche quesadillas or pupusas. And so we were trying really hard to see where they got their source, right? So we were going from food cart to food cart to food cart, and each person would give us some different vague direction. And we ended up kind of in this industrial, you know, like bulk food supply, grocery supply store kind of thing. And there it was, sitting on the top shelf in a jar. And on the jar it said, Mexican caviar. And so after all of that searching, we kind of just found a jarred version of it. It wasn't even fresh. And that's, I guess, the market that's been supplying all of these food carts. But anyway, so we asked the woman behind the counter about it, and she kind of laughed at us. And she was like, if you want it fresh, you need to go down to Tijuana. Otherwise, you won't be able to find it.
Meanwhile, my other friend and I are walking across the border, and you know, it's taken us about half an hour just to figure out where our line is and start crossing and get through. Finally, about another hour into it, we're finally approaching the Border Patrol agents and the customs agents to have our bags checked and our documentation checked. And so at this point, definitely feeling nervous and going through every scenario in my head, having discussions in my head and on how, you know, how to respond to different questions and, just, you know, building up all these different scenarios and thinking about, like, different ways of how it can all go down. When they finally noticed the bag of huitlacoche and asked me what it was, I didn't think they were going to know what it was, so I just said corn. But the person immediately recognized it and said huitlacoche, kind of correcting me. And I said yes, actually, and I was glad, and I commented that I was glad that they knew what it was. But immediately they started opening up their notebook and started searching to see if there was something on the list of items that aren't allowed in. And so as they're looking it up, they're also asking me questions and they're wondering if I've brought it in before in the past. And I said, yes, I had, that, you know, this wasn't the first time that I brought it over. And so almost like as soon as I finished answering that, I don't know if she found the answer in her notebook, because it seemed like her own personal notebook and a list of things that she had written down. She didn't find it, or she just like immediately agreed and said, oh yeah, it's something that you can bring over.
I learned that there's a process for it, but it's very complicated. So it could end up in the interpretation of the agent, the CBP agent. So if the agent doesn't know anything, they're just going to reject it. Yeah. And it could fall in the category of biological material, which requires a very complicated process to get a permit to cross. Okay. Or it could fall into the mushroom and, you know, like the psychedelic area, where also it's going to be rejected. And let's say that the agent doesn't know anything and goes to Wikipedia to try to find out what huitlacoche is. And the first sentence that you find there is that it's a disease.
Corn smut is a plant disease caused by the pathogenic fungus Ustilagomedes, one of several cereal crop pathogens called smut. The fungus forms galls on all above-ground parts of corn.
And the Western agriculture has been given the name devil's corn, corn smut, and a bunch of other derogatory terms, because it's actually caused a lot of damage to the agricultural industry.
Smut-infected plants display characteristic tumors consisting of hypertrophied plant tissue and massive numbers of black fungal teliospores.
The next area was like the x-ray machine where you put your bags through to be x-rayed. And as I'm walking over to that area, you could tell the rest of the custom agents like saw my bag and I caught their eye, and they're all kind of started pointing at it, including one of them who stopped at the booth of the custom agent that had just checked my documentation to ask what that was and if she had checked it. And she was pointing at me and like agreeing and yes and explaining to him what it was as I'm putting my bag on the conveyor belt to go through the machine. And then those two Border Patrol agents get up immediately and like open the bag, get to the bag and ask me what it is, and are like kind of also eyeballing over to the person I just came from. And she's also kind of looking at them, kind of giving them the assurance that it's okay, while she's explaining to the other Border Patrol agent. And while I'm also explaining that they just checked it and that she said it was okay, at that point it turned to more of curiosity, because even one of the Border Patrol agents, like that was at the conveyor belt, just kind of made a look, kind of like a funny, gross look, like, oh, but like, you know, kind of looking at me, kind of like with a smile, like, okay, like, I guess you're making it through with that, like, you know, like.
grass. I know. Deep breath. Sigh of relief.
This food, because I mean, a big part of it is like, why is it that border? Is it the border then that dictates our relationship to the food? Is it our fear of fungus? Is it the agricultural industry? Is it all of those things? You know, is it racism? Is it institutionalized racism? Systems of oppression? It's all of those things, right? So.
So, Wiribis is a misspelling of the Yaqui word Wibisim, which means huitlacoche. There is a bird that is endemic to our home territories in Sonora that eats this particular fungus. There are other villages that are also named after food medicines, like Cocori is named after Cocoin, which is chiltepin, and Belem, which is named, which means it's a misspelling of Benem, which is named after the pitaya cactus fruit. So these food medicines are integral to our culture. And even though we here in the United States are dissociated from it, doesn't mean that we can't reconnect. So while this project of ours to reconnect with Huitlacoche is the first, it's not the last. It's the first of many. And we want to do these demonstrations, and we want to develop this relationship with our chiltepin medicine as well. And the pitaya fruit, because all of these things promote our health and promote our well-being, both physically, mentally, and spiritually.
The first time I cooked it, I wasn't even sure if I was going to eat it, because I was like, what the? I only found out about it because there was some hip person in Chicago who was opening up a restaurant after going to Oaxaca, and they were growing, and they were using this corn smut, and they were making kind of fun of the name a little bit, and I was like, what's going on? And I had sort of heard about it, but I wasn't interested in it until this moment. And so I really wanted it. I felt like I needed to rescue it from like the white hipster community who was going to Oaxaca and basically taking recipes from Oaxaca and coming to the United States and opening up their own restaurants and creating their own dishes with the Oaxacan flair. And then I started noticing that they were changing the name, actually, because they couldn't say huitlacoche and corn smut. Nobody wants to eat corn smut, so they started using corn truffle and corn caviar.
And on the jar it said Mexican caviar.
But they were changing the name because nobody was able to say huitlacoche, and so they started changing the name to sound more appealing, appetizing. And they started calling it corn caviar and corn truffle or Mexican truffle or mural. And in that way, now this food has become more exotic. Now I could charge you $50 for a little taster of it and so on and so forth, right? In that process, though, in my eyes, it's indigenous erasure. It's another form of taking out the name and erasing that history and the people who've cultivated, who grew along with it. We literally evolved with corn. If you know the story of corn.
I think that's when I was like, I can't, you know, I was already like into mushrooms and I was already on a decolonizing path and reconnecting, you know, but at that moment I was like, oh no, like this is like really blatant, like, in my eyes, I felt like racism. Like it stems from like that, like those prejudices that are like that even begin with food, begin with your connection with the land. And so to me, I was like, oh, that's like those are just like racist policies and like wanting to erase us and like take our food away and change it to something that's more palpable to like the Western palate and like, you know, the way they can say it, it's easier for them. And I was like, no, we gotta rescue it. Adding a little more cheese. Who, by show of hands,
It is her first time eating with Tlacoche today. Cool, 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 cool. Who's thinking about it, but maybe not going to do it?
A lot happens, like, the first time cooking it or eating it. Especially any food that you try for the first time, they say you get new neural connections, right? Like, so I think, like, it's like your brain grows in a sense. Mm-hmm. And then you have a new taste memory. But then if you layer on, like, if it's part of your ancestral foods, we're actually tasting or eating and experiencing what our ancestors, mm-hmm. you know, experience on a daily.
Good. What are your, anybody want to share any reflections? What do they think? What are the smells? Anything going on? I'm going to ask you again if you don't want to share right now.
I'll ask you later.
But yeah, I'm curious, like anything being woken up inside of you?
It makes me feel connected to Mexico. It takes me back to Mexico City. I feel like I'm traveling. Yeah, like transported across space.
When I eat huitlacoche, it really makes me feel like a child. That's the best way I can describe it. I connect it to my memory of eating and tasting dirt, playing with dirt and mud as a kid a lot. And so I'm immediately like transported there, and it's definitely an outside and like earthy feeling that comes over me.
Going back in time almost, like it makes me feel like I'm part of the land again.
Connection to the corn. Mm. Our connection of who we are as peoples and the beauty of our earth mother, the Pachamama, that, you know, just provides everything that we need, that, and so many things, as you said, we're afraid of. Oh no, the fungus! Yeah. Don't touch it.
Don't the fungus it. Is among us.
This podcast is brought to you by the Digital Salon Editorial Board, Danielle Gonzalez, Rebecca Smith, Olivia Arena, and Dawa Tikin, in conjunction with UCLA's City Lab and Urban Humanities Initiative. We would like to thank Gus Wendell, Jacqueline Barrios, Dana Cuff, Gustavo Leclerc, Rain Laborde Ruiz, Martin Brennan, and everyone else who made this podcast possible. We would also like to thank our peer reviewers for their time and dedication, Charles Livermore, M. Marinoff, Jacqueline Barrios, Mario Ceballos, Shane Rayner Roth, and those who wish to remain anonymous. Thanks for listening to the Digital Salon podcast. New episodes are released every Thursday. We hope to see you then.